In my last book, which is called A Program of Absolute Disorder, Decolonizing the Museum, the title of Program of Absolute Disorder is taken from Frantz Fanon in The Wretch of the Earth, when he say, decolonization is a program of absolute disorder. It cannot, you know, be made like nicely around a table. So I thought about it because decolonization now has become, you know, everyone is using it, everyone, fashion is being decolonized, advertisement, everything, food, everything. So I said to myself, but decolonization is more serious than that. People have died for it. I mean, it's really a serious thing, you know, it's really the dismantling of a structure, the dismantling of a politics. So it's not just, you know, like, let's be nice to each other. What does it mean? And I pick up the museum because I thought that the role of the museum in the making of the structure of inequality, extraction, dispossession, has been marginalized. A lot of people did not see why the museum, you know, was there. The police, the school, the army, but the museum, this is, you know, the temple of beauty. So I wanted to show that it's not a neutral space, not at all. And I wanted also to approach this as a total social institution, because mostly people will be focusing on what is on the wall. Do we have, you know, 50% women, 50% men, and among the women and the men, do we have enough, you know, diversity? And I say again, you know, it's a social institution. So there are people who clean, who cook, who guard the place, who is hired, why, you know, what are the racial, social hierarchy within and gender hierarchy within the institution, why this difference in salary, why the cleaning woman will earn like a tenth of the curator. Why? Because without the cleaning woman, there is no curatorial practices. What is the story of the institution? When was it created? What is the culture? Because a museum which was born in 19th or 20th century will be different. And then I look at one museum because it's, for me, the example of the universal museum, what is called the universal museum, and it's the Louvre in Paris. Why the Louvre? Because it's a child of the Enlightenment and of the French Revolution. Fantastic parents, right? Better, you know, you cannot have better parents in Europe. Of the Enlightenment and a revolution, which is not the case of the British Museum or the Prado, which is in fact later 19th century. So this is one thing I was looking at. And why? Because the Louvre is created by the French revolutionary so that all the art that was in the end of the aristocrat, the church, the king, will return to the people. Because all this art they could accumulate all this art because of their exploitation of the people. So the true owner of this art was the people. A very revolutionary gesture. No compensation. They just take the thing and say, this is for the people now. But at the same time, the revolutionary will say, all the art that is in Europe and elsewhere, it's in fact enslaved because it's in the end of tyrants. And so we, as revolutionary, have the right to take them and bring them back to the land of liberty. So the revolution, the French Revolutionary Army, will loot Belgium, Germany, Italy, Spain. I mean, like dozens of painting, statue, archive document will be taken back to France because France is a land of liberty. And so this art will be free, because otherwise it would be. So you could say, okay, good, perhaps they did that, and then, you know, in the meantime, as long as these people are under tyranny, and when the people will be free, they will give back the art. No, it became the property of the French people. And so my argument is like it was setting the example for the looting under colonization. Because it started already there. And Napoleon was the greatest looter. 80% of everything in Venice was looted by Napoleon and brought back to France. Spain, everything. I mean, like the greatest painter, sculptor, and so on, taken back to France. So I say it set up an example for what will come later, because it was no longer, during war, of course, people who win the war take everything and loot and take back. But this was the first time it was made in the name of the Republic, in the name of liberty. So he set up the example. And the Louvre, even though after Napoleon's defeat, of course, European states say, okay, we want our things back, right? But they admire, the Louvre was so much admired nonetheless for what the example of this universal museum that most European states say, we have to do the same thing. And most of the museum that mostly, as I said, 19th century, were built on the model of the Louvre, of this universal museum. My thing is also the Universal Museum is a museum where you find in the same place things from Greece, from Rome, from Aztec Empire, from Russia, for everywhere, and even human remain, like in the same place. So I can see a rug from Persia in the, 15th century, African mask from Mali. I mean, Islamic art, all this in one place. You will never find this in the Global South. In museum in Mexico or Lima or wherever, or Lagos, you're not going to find, let's say, Italian Renaissance furniture or Spanish jewelry. No, that's not true. Or human remain from Europe. You're not going to find human skeleton, European. In a museum. So the Universal is really, museum there in the Global South are national museum in the sense that they will show the treasure of the nation, like in Mexico City. And if you find things European, it's colonial European, like what was, in the Spanish-Mexican elite. Another thing I point to when we say the museum, is really a Western institution. 61% of museums are in Western Europe and North America. 61%. Eastern Europe, I think it's 12%, 0.8% in Africa, 0.7% in the Arab world. So huge asymmetry. So we are talking about a Western institution which was also able to be hegemonic because of everything that they looted. No other museum today can compete with British Museum, Louvre, Prado, Humboldt, whatever. British Museum has 8 million objects there from everywhere. The phrase of Parthenon being. So even, things from Europe, they don't give it back. And Quai-Branly is like, 150. I don't know, perhaps I'm going to say stupid things, but Tervuren also in Congo. We are in the 100,000 object. Everything was taken. 19th century was like everything came back. And when I visited, the collection, not what is being shown in the gallery, you don't have, let's say, 100 masks. You're going to have 1,000 and 1,000 and 1,000 of them, as if, it has to be exhaustive, So we're not going to bring back just the European, we're not going to bring back, let's say even 1,000. No, it has to be, 10 of 1,000. And you don't understand why, because very little of it is being shown, very little. And to this day, for instance, because of the demand for restitution, some curator in most museum, don't know where the thing come from. They don't have the history. What we see in museum is 10% usually of the collection, right? So for the 10%, they might know, okay, this was, Northern India or, Afghanistan. But in fact, being able to describe, most of them don't know. And I have friends who have, who are experts, for instance, on Cameroon or whatever, and they've been in this committee, and they told me, Françoise, this art historian, this curator, have like no clue. They don't know, they cannot tell you. So they have this on top of it for centuries. They didn't do the work even, they didn't do the job. So for me, and of course also the question of human remain, that you have so much, you have ton of hair hair. What are they doing with that? You know, they brought back that and to study. It was at the beginning, was, you know, it was a science of race in Europe to show that these people were inferior. It's really, I mean, and also, you know, they opened graves, you know, they went into graves. I mean, they did things that you don't do, you know? So for me, I mean, after telling all this story, it's like, it was really the question because it's an hegemonic model. The Western Museum, when you see museums being built in Africa or Asia, they're on the model of the Western Museum. Big, impressive, star architect, prestigious collection. I mean, they try, you know, really, because otherwise. Yeah. So my question at the end of the book is like, could we imagine what would be the post-museum? We are in the 21st century. I mean, this model has found its limits, right? Or like, what more can we do? I mean, and perhaps what can be done is more social justice, more racial justice, more gender justice in this institution. And we are far from it, very far. There is a restitution, and they should absolutely restitute as soon as it's being asked. But at the end, my question is like, if we wanted to tell story today, should we really follow that model or should we invent something else? And then we have to ask ourselves questions that are connected to the, how can I say, to the construction of the Western Museum is conservation. Do we want to keep everything like that? You know, there are things, okay, but they disappear. Human beings will not stop to create, will not stop to invent, you know. And for instance, in Vancouver, in Western Canada, there is a big, big ethnological museum, beautiful, mostly indigenous community. And so some years ago, they started to reconnect with the community and say, okay, we would like to do something with you, what, you know, with all these objects that were taken by missionary or bought, but, you know, also because people were starving, so they were selling, you know, what they had or taken. And it was interesting because you had really a very a huge diversity of answer. Some communities say, we don't want to talk to you. You are thieves. We don't talk to thieves. Don't come to us. We don't want to talk to you. You know, kind of a, it's the museum. We don't speak with museum people. This, for us, is a colonial institution. Other, for instance, say, the way in which the museum also fix anesthetics. So, for instance, you have this totem, you know, of an indigenous community, and usually they are outside. So the sun, the rain, the wind, and they're going to disappear. Their color is going to disappear. And so the community may choose either to build the same or to build something else. By taking it and preserving as it was, the community say you fixed an aesthetic as this is the totem. Whereas a totem was something that will, you know, be transformed, disappear, or that will be built. So that's also the problem. Other, for instance, wanted, as I say, we have not decided for the objects, so for now, you cannot show them. So we are discussing, we're going to. Others say, we want to be able to come to the museum and take the object for our rituals, so you have to have rooms for that. And then the object can return to the gallery when they will be, you know, cleansed from the energy. What I meant by that is like many answer, whereas the West presented as, you want the object? Here, you know, and it's from state to state. Mm-hmm. And some community also told me, but we don't want it to go back to the state, you know, for instance, to the national big national museum in Brazil, let's say. We are an indigenous community. We're never going to go to Sao Paulo or to Rio. So our thing will be there in a state that has been colonial, even as change and so on, but has been colonial. So what is it, you know? And also quite often the West also impose condition. Do you have a museum? What are your conditions of conservation? Do you have curators? Do you have, you know, all these technicians? So for me, it's really a way of domination, still of domination. And if the people want the object to sell them or to whatever do with them, it's their right. The thief should not impose his condition on the victim of the theft. I mean, I have stolen something from you. I know, fine, and yes, okay, I'm not giving it to you, but I'm giving it to you only if, only if, only if. But what is that? No. You know, you, in fact, I should pay you damage for your loss. On top of returning your object, I should pay you because there have been damage for the loss. People were deprived of so many things. So it's a, for me, it's an institution that cannot be saved in the sense it's not gonna go, it's not saying let's burn the Louvre or the Prado, but they are there, and to some extent also, it's their burden to find the solution. It should not be the burden of other people. Community should say, okay, we want this and we want that. But after what you do, because in some instance, in discussion I had, I was asked by people of museum, but what do you want us to do with all this object? And I say, it's not my problem. It's yours. What was in your mind when your ancestor accumulated 300,000 objects? You don't even know what to do with them now. And I should help you to solve your problem. Too bad. Do something. I don't know. I don't know. We can talk about it. Perhaps you could sell them and give us the money. Give the money to a community of migrant, to whatever, to minority. We need to have a cultural center, you know. So it's all this question. And then, so at the end of the book, I examine some example of post-museum, what I call post-museum, that is, you know, what is to tell a story without following the Western model of the museum. And you do have quite a lot because community also want, a lot of community around the world want to save something from their heritage, from their object, but they want to think through to avoid to do it. The way the Western Museum is doing. That is, you take an object that was part of the cultural, social, affective environment, you take it out of it, and this has become something you cannot even no longer touch or try. And then you don't even know who made it or whatever, right? So you see, for instance, when we look at statue from a Hindu temple, but we don't know who made it. And we will never know. And this statue was in a temple and was receiving offering flowers, food. People were coming to talk to her, you know, telling her. And now she's a piece of stone. She's just a piece of stone or a piece of wood or whatever she. So that's also, it's a question what the museum did. And the Western Museum did it on purpose because they say we are secularizing the object. This object was too much in a tradition. We are taking it out of the tradition and putting it, I don't know, in the modern world. And so it's an operation, total colonial operation. Who told you to do that? You know, why? So there is also the question of accumulation that I think also, because when you look at the number of objects, you are really, your head spin. And the fact that in any museum in Europe, even smaller museum, you're going to find African and Asian art. What is that? Because I visit a lot of museums, but even, you know, a small city I go, and I get in and I see again African and Asian objects. I say, what is that, you know? You know, I can understand in Paris or, you know, but small city. And through Europe, not just in France. So you have this feeling of incredible avidity, you know, anyway, that is very disturbing also, very disturbing. But what I say really at the end is like the work that we have to do, I mean, those who want, is really now to work on this post-museum. Because there is a need for transmission. There is a need for transmission and not just through books. So let's see how we're going to do. And so I talk very quickly also about a project I work in on Réunion Island for 10 years, and that for which I suggested a museum without object. Which did not mean that you will not have object, but the object was not the starting point of the story. Whereas in the West, the object tell you the story, right? This is, you know, Christ, 11th century, you know, Germany, and around there is a story, right? Or this rug from Persia. But in Réunion, you did not have any material object that will testify for the life of the enslaved, because nobody paid attention, the state did not pay attention. So when you had the abolition of slavery, everything was lost or destroyed or whatever, right? So you did not have. And you have very few objects also from a lot of migrant or indentured worker. Let's say you're going to find, started to find objects from them from 1920, you see, 1910, so quite late. So does that mean that these people have no story, no narrative, because they don't have objects? So we say we will start from the narrative and not from the object. So this is why we call a museum without object. The starting point will not be the object. So what I mean is like all this reflection about how you tell a story, how you, you know, outside of the book, outside of cinema, outside of theater, outside, is a good question, but does not have to follow the model of the Western Museum.
A lot of, it's a huge place to think, project.
Yeah, and as I say, you get a lot of little, it's usually when you have this experience, they are little, because, you know, effectively people want also to escape the weight of money or financing, you know, if you don't have the money, because private collection today, it's huge. There are, some of them are much bigger than the public collection. It's private collection now. It's billionaire who can, attract. And so you have an incredible, you always have a market for objects. It does not start now, but now it's huge, because investing in art has become again a very interesting investment in terms of capital. So you do, a lot of public institutions can no longer afford to buy object. And it's a billionaire. So either after they give a gift and so on, because they get taxes out, or, you know, or they open their own museum. You've got a lot of private museum. So anyway, the point is also to get out of this market, to get out of this, you know, kind of logic of, you know, trafficking. It's a kind of, you know, and get out of that and say, okay, so we will not depend on that, because otherwise, there is no other solution to have like a big, big boss that's going to give you money. And so avoid it.
Well, contemporary artists since 70s or 80s, they tried to break a little bit. I don't know until which point, honestly, but...
Contemporary art is also becoming a big market. And so they are the new museums. I mean, although you do still have Museum of Civilization. But yes, there is a huge market. So it's also, how do you get out of this logic, you know, so collective, you know, artist collective, alternative form of exhibition, more ephemeris museum, you know, a lot of things. I mean, you do have a lot, artists are doing a lot of alternative, you know, things. They are not necessarily on the map, but a lot of them, yeah. Yeah.